This podcast is brought to you today by SafeMap International. Hey, on June 29th in Atlanta, Georgia, SafeMap is presenting Safety on the Edge North America, featuring Corey Pitzer and Todd Conklin. It'll be held in the Embassy Suites Hotel at Centennial Olympic Park, right in downtown Atlanta, very nearby the ASSE meeting. And it's an entire day of workshop around safety and the new view. It's open discussion. We're going to set our own agendas, and it's going to be a really good time to sort of talk about advanced knowledge of this kind of thing that we do all the time, this new view of safety. It's yours if you're interested. Early bird registration is $445, and you can contact SafeMap International, and that phone number is 604-642-6110. Now, let's go to the podcast. I can't believe the problems you put up with. You're just an amazing human being. A lesser person would have just grumbled.
Yes, they would have. And that's why my resilience as a human being should serve as an inspiration to others.
and that's exactly the point. Everybody, welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host. If we haven't met before, my friends call me Todd. You can call me Todd. Most people call me Todd. So that's pretty much the name I go by, Todd Conklin. And I'm really psyched you're here. This podcast, I think, is going to be really interesting. I've been trying to get this one done for a while. And finally, all the little things fell into place and we got it recorded. So today we're going to talk to an attorney. Really about the notion of risk and risk management. And it's a great conversation. I think you're going to find it very interesting. It certainly was fun. Things are going great here. I don't know what you're thinking, but, golly, it's great fun. To me, the spring's a great part of the year. If you live in New Mexico, I don't know if you guys ever been here, but if you live in New Mexico, spring is really a super good time. And fall's a really super good time, kind of for different reasons. Spring, there's all, you know, we're rafting and there's all sorts of excitement and there's stuff to do here and people are really wound up and getting ready for summer. Summer's great, but it's not spring. And then fall, everything smells good, which is a weird thing to say, but it's completely true about where I live. I mean, it's totally a good smelling place. Anything new? Oh, you heard the little promo for the Safety on the Edge in Atlanta right after ASSE with Corey and I. I've done these a couple times with Corey, never in the United States, the first one in North America. They're really, really fun. And I'm sorry I referred to myself in third person like that. I probably should have read the ad copy differently, but I kind of didn't read it before I did it. And so I probably would have said me instead of him, but I didn't. What else do I have to say? Lots of interesting things and thoughts going in my mind, but you've probably been following them. The big conversation on risk was really popular. The numbers of the podcast are just going crazy, and that's great. Everyone's welcome. I'm glad you're here. Subscribe if you get a chance. That helps a lot. Write a review. That seems to be really important to lots of people, but mostly just listen and participate. That's really what we want from you, is just a chance to sort of hear what you're thinking. So I'm going to shut up. Because I think it's much more interesting for you to listen to this interview. I think you'll find the interview really, really good. It's certainly enlightening to me to hear somebody say we have to provide a place at the table for legal before something happens so that they're really in a position to understand the new view after something happens. And there's more. So listen carefully. This, my friends, is Charlie Madison and a legal view of the new view for safety and reliability right here on the Pre-Accident Podcast. Talk to you later at the end of this for sure. All right, Charlie Madison, introduce yourself to us. Tell us why we think you would be worth spending 30 minutes listening to.
Well, Todd, thank you for having me on. As you know, I have been a lawyer for a very long time.
So we're probably going to have to stop. We're going to have to stop because I think I can't have lawyers on. I think I signed a thing somewhere. I can't remember. I'll have to have someone look at it, but... No, I'm sorry. I interrupted. I interrupted long enough to just interrupt.
Does it help if I'm if I'm a recovering lawyer.
Maybe. But you know, most of the people that listen to this podcast, the lawyers are the people who say no all the time. Are you going to say no a lot of times?
Only once, and that will be now, in answer to your question, which is, no, I will not say no a bunch.
So let me back out and tell us what you were starting to say, because that's perfect.
Yeah. Well, I started out and spent about 17 years in trial practice, and I defended people toward the end of my career, doctors and hospitals who were in medical malpractice cases. And so I dealt with liability issues all the time. And part of my work, in fact, the core of my work later was with psychiatrists. And that's where I really started getting into a risk management role. The first portion of my career, when you've got lawsuits, the risk is already, it's already occurred. The management's already done. You're just picking up the pieces, burying the bodies and all that. But I started getting acquainted with, actual risk management work when I was working with psychiatrists. I would get a phone call from the risk management arm of the American Psychiatric Association, and they would say, Charlie, Dr. So-and-so just got a message on their message machine 10 minutes ago that from the parents of the patient who told him on the message that his patient had just committed suicide. And we told the doctor not to talk to the family or ever call them back. So please call and talk to the doctor. And so I would call the doctor up. And the first thing I would tell him is, okay, the main thing you have to do is talk to the family. And we're going to talk about how you do that. And, so that you are able to communicate what you need to and not get sued. And so I did that a bunch of times. And so by doing that, I kind of got clued into what trying to prevent bad things is about. And luckily none of my docs ever got sued. And I think a lot of that is because they really did the right thing, which was to really face the family and be very upfront with them and have a very open and honest conversation with them, which most people don't do. And they come across as being guilty.
Would you say that's what led you into sort of a more enlightened view? Is that what started you on the trail to the kind of this new view?
Yes. And it was very obvious that I was giving recommendations that other people were not. Because the universal recommendation was you never talk to the family. And I think the reason that they were giving them that advice was that they were trying to offer an idiot-proof solution to a very complicated problem.
Can I repeat that? Idiot-proof solution to a complicated problem. Boy, that's good. That's good.
I just made that up now.
It worked.
Yeah. So, and I think there's a normal human tendency to want to do that, at least within the risk management world. It's kind of their stock and trade. Because if you lay down an idiot-proof rule, you can't screw up by doing something wrong. So if you don't talk to the family, you can't say the wrong thing. But what it leaves on the table is the fact that inherently the family is going to be horribly offended that you didn't talk to them, and they will see the reticence to talk as an admission that you did something wrong. So that by giving them the recommendation that they not talk to the family, they were almost dooming their docs, the people they were taking care of, to trouble. But a conversation with family after something like that is frightening for the doc and for the people who are guarding their liability. But if you really understand what the issues are and you're able to have a good conversation with the doctor about how to hold the conversation, they are able to communicate what is really important to them, which is they're just as devastated as the family is. And, you know, they're just as shocked and miserable as the family people are. And they really want to express their sorrow and, you know, communicate that to the family and be as open as they possibly can. And they were always relieved as soon as I told them, hey, the first thing you got to do is talk to the family. It was like everything that we talked about after that was easy, because that was really the main thing they wanted to do, because that's why they're in the business of doing what they do, is to help people. And it would have been a big problem to them and very, very unsatisfying if they had to remain silent and not talk to them.
But that's a huge shift, right? Because you're shifting from tightly controlled information in order to manage liability to actually open and honest communication, where more information actually empowers both the doctor and the family to take more progressive, more mature moves forward, right? Am I getting that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that's always a concern when there's been a fatality, and this is a legal issue, and it's one that I always ignored except for asking one question, and that is, a person has died, and the only person who actually has legal authority to talk on behalf of that person who just died is the representative of that person's estate. And the risk management people would tell the doc that, hey, you know, you the only person you can talk to is the administrator of the estate. And of course, you know, it could be 2 months before that person is named by the court.
How did you expand these ideas then to what you're, let me start with this question. I'm not trying to trick you or anything. I haven't given you any warning on this, but that's how these conversations are. How do you define risk?
You know, that's a very good question, because I know that there are technical definitions of it, and I've heard you describe it. But what I see it as is risk is the propensity or the possibility that something bad will happen.
And what would you say? I think that's a totally good definition of risk. It's, you know, we tend to sort of favor kind of an economic definition, you know, severity times probability equals risk, which I don't think is very accurate unless you're an actuary and you're figuring out insurance costs. But when you talk about the possibility, the propensity, I think is the word you used, how do you think about that in using sort of, this is greatly simplified, but sort of the classic notion around probability that everything that can happen will eventually happen?
Well, I think what you have to do is arm yourself to have the best possible odds of getting through whatever it is that's going on with the best possible outcome.
And so how do you do that?
How you do that is by identifying everything you can think of that could go wrong with this unraveling event that, you know, has already been a disaster. A suicide is, to use that example, is a disaster, and it can continue to unravel from there. So you try to identify what those things are that could continue to go wrong. And then you try to figure out as quickly as you can what you can do to head all of those problems off.
I hear you saying that risk is more of a risk management. It's as much as your response as it is your preparedness. Is that fair?
I think in the examples that I'm giving you, it's absolutely the response. And I think the preparedness is, you know, the things you do to prevent having to have that phone call with the poor doc who had the bad outcome.
So extrapolate these ideas to sort of operations that aren't psychologists and suicides. I mean, how do you look at this when you look at a company?
Well, I mean, I think it's in a lot of ways it's very similar because there you a lot of times have things that come to your attention You know, the role that I had when I was in-house with the company was I was in charge of all the litigation, and I was also in charge of all the claims that came through. And as a kind of an additional element, I was in charge of trying to proactively reduce litigation risk by preventing things. And sometimes we would go out and specifically try to survey something and work with the operational units and see what could be done to fix a potential hazard.
Can you proactively manage risk down?
I think you absolutely can. And part of it is by sensitizing people. When I came into the company I was in, my predecessor, who was a great guy, was kind of old school. And he didn't look at things the same way I did. And so it took me some time to be able to develop the relationships to be able to do this. But what I focused on much of the time was that when you had that bad feeling or could see that something had the potential for not going well, and we're talking about the business unit people, operational people, that a lot of times they would give me a call and we would have a meeting and talk about what it was that they were concerned about. So I was able to sensitize the organization that by openly discussing things that were potentially going to be disasters for the company, we could very easily and very quickly keep them from happening.
How did you keep them from thinking they're jinxing it? I mean, because, you know, there's kind of a certain amount of, I guess, folklore, I don't know what it is, that says if you don't talk about bad things, then they won't happen, even though that's complete crap. Mm. I think people believe it.
Yeah, they do. And in fact, that was kind of an article of faith by my predecessor who, if they got a call about something that was obviously kind of a systemic issue with what we were doing, he would openly and aggressively ignore it because nobody needed to hear about that information.
I see that a lot. This sort of whole management teams will collectively ignore really important pieces of information in the hopes that if you don't talk about it, if you don't name it, it's not a thing.
Right. And I think that's also just human nature as well, I think, because we don't want to think about things that are bad. But what I was, you know, what I was able to accomplish was that I took the opposite view, and that is once you know that you've got something that could go wrong and a potential for hurting somebody or, you know, a setup for some potential financial loss, you then have the obligation to do something about it. The knowledge itself makes you have to act. And I think we started doing that, and as a result, you know, we just didn't we didn't have as many bad things happen.
But how did you convince them that that was the right way to, I mean, how did you make that change happen, maybe is a good way to ask that question.
I think primarily it was because the company that I was working with had a culture where if something bad happened, a head would roll.
The thing that seems profoundly important to me, and this is so obvious, is that knowing less does not make you smarter.
I would say that by definition, that's true.
Yeah, no, it seems really obvious, except that the story you're telling right now, the story of collective ignorance, the story of collectively neglecting important things, which we hear all over the world, right, is really just a story of where an organization chooses to know less. So where do we take this? I mean, the question I'd ask you, because this is really a good question, is when you go into a company, when you go into an organization, or when you help somebody out, mm-hmm. what do you tell them what do you tell them to be thinking of? If you were a safety guy or a pilot or an operational excellence person listening to this podcast, what would you want to know?
I think on the one hand, I think there might be a question about, you know, how can you get your lawyers to think about things this way?
Yeah, that's the right question. Ask that. Erase all the crap I said earlier and answer that question. That's a way better question.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that is astoundingly obvious when you look at it later is that the people who are trying to administer operational excellence and safety improvement and learning are siloed away from the people who have the most influence over ultimately how those things are going to be dealt with if something particularly bad happens. And those people overwhelmingly are the lawyers. They have a great deal of influence. Even one person can have a huge influence that outweighs the influence of an entire organization on safety because of the credibility they're given and how they're viewed by management. And that means that in order to get your whole company working together on this stuff, I think lawyers have to be brought into discussions of the new view and to be part of the team on that. Because otherwise, lawyers are going to look at things the way lawyers are trained to look at things, which is on a completely different plane than everything that the new view has started to focus on. And I can elaborate on that if you want.
No, I think that's brilliant, because I think what you're telling me is we have to include the people who manage risk retrospectively after an event happens, attorneys, those kind of people, we have to include them in the prevention discussion. We've got to bring them in this conversation early, because having them in the conversation actually then allows them to work on both sides of the consequence, the prevention side and the reaction side. And it allows them to provide good counsel and to get smarter and to learn from us. So how do we teach a lawyer? How do we talk to a lawyer? How do we invite a lawyer in?
How do you invite a lawyer in?
It seems like there should be a punchline to that, you know. I don't know of one, but that seems like there should be one.
Well, there should be one, and I would imagine that it's probably a dirty joke.
Yes. Well, it's a lawyer joke. They're all kind of dirty.
Yeah, right. But I honestly think that it is part of a generalized management discussion of silos. And I'm quite serious about this. I think organizations that do the best have found ways to have open communication within their operational teams. And a lot of times there are companies that are very, very, very strictly siloed into completely separate organizations. And they can often have completely competing agendas that actually work at cross purposes. And I don't know how often you run across that in the work that you do, but I see an obvious tension between the safety guys who have a certain set of standards and training that they go through, and the legal guys who have a completely different set of training and things that they're focused on.
Could it be as simple as the fact that the lawyer guys don't see themselves as safety guys and vice versa?
Absolutely.
When in fact, the legal team has a huge role and a certain amount of accountability, I'll use that word,
right,
towards safe operations, towards safe and reliable operations every day.
Right. And if they don't know they do, that should be part of the discussion that's fostered, really, in kind of that, you know, management retreat, vice president level, you know, what are we doing as an organization and what kinds of discussions do we need to have and who needs to be brought into our planning? And I think that that's when, you know, very early in the kind of, you know, the high level stages of you're planning for how the organization operates, the safety guys need to make common cause with the lawyer guys, especially the ones involved in legal liability issues, to invite the lawyers into their world.
So one last question, the big question. What piece of advice would you give right now? What's the most important? Where should we start this process?
I think the main thing is having the lawyers understand that the linear view that the law teaches about what responsibility means in a legal in a liability context is at odds with the way organizations function. And if you can have that conversation with them and have them realize that, and that'll go a long way toward operational improvement that you really want to have. And here's what I really mean. In a legal context, lawyers have been taught, and they learn it in law school, they learn it very early on, that liability for something bad happening has a formula. And the formula is that there is a duty that's been established to do something. There's a breach of that duty. There is causation from the breach. There are damages that result from that breach. That's the liability. It's a linear equation. It's on one plane. It really is. It's two-dimensional. And lawyers are trained on that over and over and over. The law has made that quite clear that that's the way it works. And any lawsuit that results from something bad happening will, by its very nature and by the requirements of the law, examine the issue that way. And as you, I'm sure, discuss all the time, no accident, no incident, no bad outcome occurs because of that linear outline. It's far more complicated, and if you examine the issues that way, more than likely you come to a conclusion about one thing that probably was less important than everything else, and you use that as the cause. And so you don't fix the things that actually caused your problem. And I think getting the lawyers to understand that the way the organization operates is not really the way that linear equation works is that would be the best thing you could do, is to make the lawyers understand that.
That's great. How do I contact you? If somebody wants to contact you, are you contactable?
Sure. I have an email. I have an email address, and that is C Madison, MADISON, at AtleeRiskConsulting.com. And Atlee is ATLEE. And then it's riskconsulting, no dots, .com. So C Madison at AtleeRiskConsulting.com.
Got it.
That's it. And I also have a website if people want to go on, and that is AtleeRiskConsulting.com. There are some fabulous photos, fabulous information, and some fabulous articles written by a really smart blogger. So,
thanks, Charlie. That was great.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
You did an amazing All job. Right. So, what do you think? I love how lawyers parse their words. They're so careful in the way they answer questions. It's really interesting having conversations with them. I think Charlie did an amazing job. And actually, I think he's so enlightened in the way he looks at the new view and the way he looks at how legal has a role in this and where that role exists and then how this all sort of fans into the definition of risk. I really enjoyed it immensely. I thought it's a thoughtful podcast. Charlie did a phenomenal job. Phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. And these discussions are not nearly as foreign as you think they are. In fact, one of the challenges I think we have is you have to sort of invite the legal team to the table, to the safety table, to the reliability table, in order to bring them into the conversations so that they're a partner going into prevention and defending, prevention and safeguard, prevention and response before you need them. So that when you do need them, that partnership has already been sealed and they're so much smarter when they come to that table. That is everything for what we want to talk about and how we talk about this. This has been a great podcast. I've enjoyed it immensely. Thanks for being a part of this. As always, if you've got suggestions or comments, something you want to do, send them in. I'm glad to talk to anybody, and I think the conversations only get more interesting. Until then, my friends, learn something new every day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you can possibly squeeze into work while still remaining legal. And for goodness sakes, be safe.